New Galaxy Broadcasting proudly presents Integrative Hermetic Health with Hugo Rodier, MD. In this program, we explore a powerful new paradigm for health from the standpoint of integrative medicine. In his practice, Dr. Rodier integrates the ancient Hermetic art and the enduring role of food as medicine with modern nutrition, but also allowing for the wide range of important health practices, including truly valuable medical discoveries, chiropractic, acupuncture, homeopathic and herbal medicine. In this program, Hugo Rodier, an expert in intestinal health and nutrition, will help the audience discover an approach that focuses on actual cures, not the masking of the elegant simplicity of many health solutions for the sake of profit. Profit too long has been an overriding motive of the pharmaceutical companies, and sometimes, sadly, by many in the medical establishment today. Well, we're back with Dr. Rodier on the Integrative Hermetic Health Show, discussing something that's really, really interesting. The last two shows have been talking about Medicare for All bills, and we've been discussing how those bills have a certain amount of problems. And we're going to go into that, what those problems are more. But we've decided to try and develop a sort of an outline of a bill that's a little bit different, but that's built on the idea of Medicare for All, slightly modified, so it's more like, as we'll discuss, Medicare accessible for all. But this is called a Medicare perfected bill, and that's what we're going to discuss today. How are you doing today, Doctor?
Doing great, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I think that this is very sort of an exciting moment here. Let's just rehash a few things. Although Medicare for All concept has a relationship to current bills being considered, particularly the original Bernie Sanders Medicare for All bill and the current Medicare for All Act of 2019 initiated by Representative Pramila Jayapal and Representative Debbie Dingell of Washington, Democrats of Washington and Michigan, respectively, it ultimately is quite different. In other words, they are kind of different bills. And our point of view is that, well, after months of talking about healthcare in the United States with Dr. Rodier, we both realize that the Medicare for All bills are basically an attempt to make healthcare available for everyone in this country, but mainly on a financial basis. Not only is there not any kind of real upgrade in the current healthcare system, but it perpetuates that healthcare's dangers to American citizens is still there. So we do think that the current status of the medical system, as sort of fueled by pharmaceutical companies and insurance companies and very expensive surgical exponents, is kind of dangerous, isn't it?
Yes, it's downright toxic. It's a dirty little secret that the second cause of death is the medical health care system. It doesn't get listed, so we hear about cancer and cardiac issues, depression, et cetera, et cetera. But ranking second is what hospitals and doctors do to patients as far as mortality and morbidity go.
And what is first? And so, car accidents?
Cardiovascular diseases. Cancer is getting pretty close.
No, I mean first. What is first in terms of what kills people?
Cardiovascular disease.
Oh, okay. I see. I see what you mean. Yeah.
Right. So, yes. In other words, what you were saying there, your introduction, is that we're trying to buy this car sitting on cinder blocks, and we're haggling over the price, and we want to make everyone be able to afford that car. And we go on and on about, hey, you know, even poor people should buy this car. But hey, please, take a look at the car. It's sitting on cinder blocks. You see what I mean? That's
yeah.
What's going on.
When you deal with patients coming to you as an integrative physician, and they haven't come across this kind of discipline before, what do they say about their experience of the conventional medical care they received?
Well, let me tweet the question, then I'll answer it.
Okay.
Number one, they already know that I'm a bit of a rogue. They've already been on my website. They've already heard from other patients or friends that I'm not part of the system. So when they come in, they already sort of expecting to hear a confirmation of what they already have seen themselves, that the system is broken, So just about every patient comes in railing against the system, how poorly they've been treated by doctors, insurance companies, with horror stories about their experiences, that they get a whole lot of drugs and they don't feel any better, expensive drugs at that, that the visits are rushed, that insurance companies are abusing them. And so, yeah, I hear this every day from just about every patient. But again, they're a bit self-selected because we still have a whole lot of people out there that have not woken up to the sad reality. Although I feel that if we were to sit down with these people, they would have to admit that they're not that happy. They just cannot fathom that there can be an alternative. These are the people in our society, and every society has them, that do not reflect on what's going on. They don't think for themselves. And so in many ways, they have the system they deserve.
They remind, your description of them reminds me of the American voter in general.
Exactly.
Well, the fact is that current health care is bloated by multiples. Estimates of that bloating run from around 33% to 90%, depending on the philosophy and the possible entrenchment of the estimator into the current system. Of course, there are those who would say we have hands down the best medical health care in the world, and it's worth every penny, although many of our citizens cannot afford any of its rich promises ever because they are broke and they have no insurance, and they don't really realize that it probably might not work as well as they think if they had. So you agree about that bloating, right?
Oh, absolutely. The words I use is that we created a beast that has to be fed. There's a certain overhead that has to be met, and so we have to order a whole lot of tests, a certain amount of surgery, a certain amount of prescription drugs, just to stay afloat, just to come out even. So if you walk in with a hangnail, chances are you're going to be offered over-treatment of that condition.
Yeah, I think I did have a treatment of a problem with one of my nails, and I think it cost me $90 for him to cut it.
Oh, all right.
But I didn't know how, so at the time, so. Well, in our bill, which we call Medicare Perfected, Medicare is for everyone if they want it. It's a Medicare accessible to all bill. Citizens do not have to participate. Insurance companies can offer private insurance. In this new House bill, quoting from Scheffel Luther's article, which we've mentioned before, under this plan, patients would not be responsible for any cost sharing of medical expenses, and the government coverage would include hospitals, doctors, preventive care, prescription meds, and dental and vision care. Private insurance would not be allowed to sell plans that compete with the government program. Also in the bill, it says that private insurers cannot sell plans that compete with the public bill. Now, in my version, and this is for discussion, Doctor, in Medicare Perfected, private insurance companies can compete, but they will offer their services in a new type of healthcare environment in which many laws favoring unhealthy, predatory financial practices and very dangerous or expensive healthcare products and services may be eliminated. So you agree that we would let private insurers offer alternatives, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think we can force people to go one way or another. That's totally un-American. After all, we believe in competition. And so I believe that if we were to really allow the free market to work, people would flock to Medicare. Yeah, I do. Because Medicare is a bit rationed, all right? They don't cover very expensive new fandangle medications. They're very conservative with surgery. They are not likely to order any test that a doctor might want to order to protect himself or herself from a possible lawsuit, et cetera, et cetera. And so, look, I'm not saying Medicare is perfect. What I'm saying here is that people would strongly consider a coverage that might not be 100% because they will realize that, they probably don't need so much coverage. And they would also realize that if they were to be educated, they could avoid and prevent a whole lot of problems and thereby save a lot of money. So I think with time, Medicare would float to the surface. So in a way, it's a bit tricky to say, yeah, let us compete, because in my heart of hearts, I think Medicare would win.
Well, with this new idea, which we haven't really discussed, I call it the best treatment benchmark. And I mean, I really need it to be discussed because it just came from my mind and it hasn't gone through any kind of analysis. But a new law will be promulgated. It's called, which we call here, the Best Treatment Benchmark, which sets forth a criterion for research, development, and manufacture of all health services and products. The best treatment criterion for any condition will require any and all health treatments for specific conditions to be vigorously researched by the U.S. government or a vigorously regulated third party who is disconnected from any or all consequences based on the sale, distribution, or use of the treatments. Best treatments may be, for instance, dietary or beneficial untested manipulations like chiropractic or massage or homeopathic or herbal medicine, etc., that are proven by research to be the least toxic treatments available, keeping in mind that there may be categories of subjects for which the best treatment is unsuitable due to metabolic, physical, allergic sensitivities, or other types of obstacles. Of the most sophisticated nature proceeds, toxic alternatives will be eliminated by law from the marketplace. So as we have treatments that have been validated, we get rid of the toxic alternatives. Great attention will be made to prioritize research into areas dominated by pharmaceutical research and marketers made from synthesized natural substances that may have had less toxic side effects than the original substance. The paucity of research into this area is due to the search for patentable high-profit drugs, no matter what the deplorable dangerous side effects. So what you here have is a gradual increasing level of research into all the alternatives. What do you think?
Well, we already have a lot of good research and a lot of good people in the system saying we need to aim for best practices, best value, best evidence. And so a lot of people agree with this. The problem is that it's all talk because the pharmaceuticals, the insurance companies win at because of their power and money. And so, yes, in theory, we already have this. So you're putting teeth to it?
Well, yeah. I mean, we are attacking the false aspect of research that creates these things as alternatives just because it's patentable and with terrible side effects for the people who take it. In other words, we have poison factories that are called pharmaceutical companies.
Right.
Not all of them are, actually. I mean, not all these things are terrible. But there isn't the thought that research should go into getting the least toxic alternatives. And by law, if it says by law, that's the attack. Because a lot of these substances will be illegal. They will be considered to be like, okay, you can't have this pharmaceutical because it's kind of like cyanide.
Yeah. And so what we'd have to do, would include in this bill, that the research into nutrition into even pharmaceuticals be more from public money instead of private insurance companies or pharmaceutical companies who would then influence the results because whoever pays will put a lot of pressure on the researchers for the outcome to be favorable.
So we're talking about research, vigorously researched by the U.S. government or a vigorously regulated third party or disconnected from any or all financial consequences based on the sale, distribution, and use of these treatments. But going further, the next part of it, which is sort of a subset of it, is mandatory nutrition training and research with a secondary mandate to explore all types of legitimate health modalities from different systems. In many cases, in terms of specific health conditions, the best treatment benchmark will be exploring the nutritional options first, both in research and practice. Sufficient nutrition training will be mandatory in all medical schools, including updated research and all relevant specialist training. Further, all other types of non-toxic cures from various other health traditions, like herbal, osteopathic, homeopathic, essential oils, acupuncture, etc., will be explored vigorously to see if they warrant research, and then the research will be conducted. Health research will no longer favor the allopathic research solutions.
Yes, and I would add corollary to this section in that for those who might say, well, we cannot afford for the government, for public money to be paying for this research, I would say you need to wait for the results because as the results come in and the modalities are marketed and then offered to the public, they would be a lot cheaper. You see, because take for instance a particular drug. Okay, they'll charge you hundreds of dollars for that new drug, and that's no exaggeration. New drugs are about $200, $300, and in some cases thousands of dollars per month. Because they say, the pharmaceuticals say, well, we need to get our money back from all the research we invested. Well, they wouldn't have that argument. So let's say drug X comes out having been researched and et cetera, but by public funding, then the pharmaceuticals, when they go and produce that drug, because they got the machinery to do it, they could not charge you the exorbitant prices they're doing now because they didn't pay for the research. You follow?
Yeah. Well, you also have criteria for research that takes years and billions of dollars, and that's partially because it's controlled by the FDA, right?
Well, where the FDA takes the half of their funds is from the pharmaceuticals, so we need to avoid that. That's why public money research would, and I'm saying that the FDA would be funded more by the government than the pharmaceuticals.
Well, yeah, it's just an incredible problem. I mean, it is so really weird that you have a health system that really is not a health system. It's really a toxification system. It's like they complain about the war against drugs, you know, and that means, you know, like heroin, cocaine, and so forth. But really, the drugs that are submitted to people and what it how it affects them, if you listen to any of these advertisements, you see that they're probably just as bad or worse. They may not be all of them may not be addictive, but they are destructive. Let's now take a short break. This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. Want to write a book but don't want the challenges of developing time-consuming social media platform, costly private book promotions, complex email campaigns, and advertising commitments? If you write a book about your business, you don't need a mass audience. Focus on prospective clients with the best business card there is, your own book. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro de Cielo, a Spanish treasure ship, sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We can take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
My God! Are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born.
When Patricia Welch began to work with composer Edgar Arendt and myself as lyricist, our first song was Christmas in Your Eyes. But after that, we began a series of songs whose style we called neoclassique. The first song we did in this style was Love Never Withers. Here it is.
Its great shrieks make me cry. I remember the joyous gleam that it stole from my eyes. I remember that day when the wind swept away life's dear comfort and warmth on that bitter autumn day. Maple slid through the night to the carousel's ruckus dance, far from destiny's light. Silly children we played, but forgot how to pray. We trapped in ourselves, and we couldn't get away. Memory haunts me in the shadows of sleep. The promise we buried, we swore we would keep. A passion that lives in the can't fail this promise again, again. Maple leaves curl and quiver and flame in the air. Their rude act of dying paints red, brown everywhere.
This is Johnny Bluestar. We're back with Dr. Hugo Rodier on the Integrative Hermetic Health Show, discussing our bold new proposal called Medicare Perfected. Okay, so here let's go to another exciting controversy. Can doctors and hospitals avoid participation in Medicare Perfected? I say no, they can't. They will be mandated to accept, as an example, and I'm not sure of this criteria, say 40% or so of their patients as long as load as Medicare Perfected patients. To make this possible, doctors will need to be better compensated than previously. The savings of this kind of health care making this possible. In the instance when this percentage does not cover enough patients, the criteria must be established to compel doctors to take a greater percentage, or alternative facilities and doctors set up by the federal government that will admit all Medicare perfected patients. In other words, there will be separate hospitals that will be controlled entirely by the government in case we need that. What do you think of that?
Well, I agree with what you're trying to say, but I don't think doctors should be compelled.
But what if they go on strike? What if they all say, what if 95% of the doctors say they're not going to do it?
Well, let me finish.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because the other part of your argument is that doctors should be compensated fairly. And so if a doctor gets compensated 90% of his fee from Medicare and 90% from the private insurance companies, no doctor's going to refuse Medicare. So I think the emphasis should be in what you say here clearly, that doctors should be fairly compensated. Once you do that, you don't have to compel them. And so the minute you put compel or obligated, they're just not going to fly. I'm sorry, but I think you avoid the whole argument by your second premise.
Well, don't you think that certain doctors with specialties are charging way, way more than maybe than you'd consider to be fair?
That is true.
So I think there needs, in other words, the benchmark for compensation needs to have a lot of consideration. Because sometimes I think that people are choosing to be, I would say probably 80% of it, these people are choosing to be doctors and specialties because they want to be rich.
Yes, that is true. But, you know, I would be more inclined to lower the return or the compensation to doctors in the private insurance realm and still try to make it equal. But I don't think that obligating doctors to take patients is going to fly. I mean, I understand where you're coming from, but you'd have just about every, you'd have the AMA against you.
Well, I mean, if you look at these other countries, like France, say, you would think that these doctors have to take, they have to take patients.
I don't think they do that.
Really? Okay. Well, then, how do they manage to keep their doctors? They compensate them well.
No, they don't. Doctors in France are more like school teachers. So that's what I'm saying. You have rich doctors. I mean, some of the super specialists, you know, have to make more money or you wouldn't get anybody to go into those specialties. What I'm saying is to equalize the field a little more and reward primary care a lot more. But to command, I don't think it's going to work.
So you're saying that we would say that doctors have a choice not to take Medicare for patients?
No, they wouldn't. Look, if you compensate doctors the same from both insurance company or both the insurance companies, private insurance companies, and Medicare, they would be incentivized to take Medicare the same as anybody else.
Okay, I see. So I think it would be interesting to explore how this has developed in different countries.
Yeah, exactly. So like I said, in France, doctors, when you speak of a doctor, it's more like a school teacher. I mean, people still think they're smart and humanitarian, but they don't have the super rich connotation that we have here in the United States.
Right. Well, let's get to go ahead. I'm
like
sorry.
Like you said at the beginning, this is a controversial issue.
Yeah. And it's something I think we need to really deal with with a little more research,
right.
Just to see how it plays out in other countries. Well, now let's talk about, here's another controversial thing, prices of pharmaceuticals. The agency that runs Medicare perfected will negotiate prices with manufacturers. But in the absence of perceived fairness, a special agency panel will intervene with the goal of the products and services to be affordable to Medicare perfected and to their patients. If this cannot be resolved, Medicare perfected can authorize its own manufacture and distribution of these products by the government or an authorized third party. The health of the American people utilizing this public option will come first.
Well, we kind of touched on this before. If the research money is more public, from public funds, from government funds, the price of the drugs will drop dramatically. So there's that already. Number two, I think we can't pass laws to limit the margin of profit of any item. Did you know that grocery stores, their margin of profit is 1% to 2%, and they do fairly well, but the margin of profit of pharmaceuticals is 30%. That's outrageous.
Is this authorized by law or this is just convention?
The market is not regulated enough to prevent these abuses. But like I said, you know, if the research money was public, that would be a great factor in reducing price. The second way to do it is, like you say, is legislation. And look, we have good examples in Europe. Of course, you know, a lot of people will say I'm a socialist by telling you this.
Oh, my God.
But CEOs in Europe cannot make more than, I believe, €1 million per year.
Uh-huh.
And who cannot live on €1 million? Come on. And so, but CEOs...
I have no idea what €1 million is. What is it in American terms?
It would be like $1.3 million.
Right, instead of 10 or 15, 20 million or 30 million or 50 million.
There's no limit in America. There is no limit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing about it, now socialism has come into the forefront here in many different levels. And it's really, the fact is that every country has socialist and capitalist tendencies. And they blend them together. It's very rarely that there's a completely honest socialist. I mean, a country that just everything's owned by the government, all business, or the opposite, that everything is just done on a capitalist basis. And that's an imbalance in thinking. It's a kind of when people start talking about socialism or capitalism being bad, it's a sign of a true imbalance in their thinking.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a balance. There's no pure system. And yeah, this black and white stuff, it just it's so toxic, and a sign of immaturity, a sign of not seeing life for what it is. And yep.
We'll now take a short break and be right back.
My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. We are focused on original, innovative projects that are good for humanity. These projects could be nonfiction books or novels, fictional screenplays or documentary content, websites and website content, commercial advertising content for print, audio, or video products on the internet, television, or radio, musical scores for advertising, television, or film, video, audio editing, etc. We want to promote products and projects that support the environment, encourage a healthy experience in living, developing, nurturing, and useful technology, and offering platforms for positive, socially constructive entertainment or informative, transformative media. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast, and we offer client-based and collaborative products, as well as the opportunity of active investors to join us in the creation and promotion of proprietary products, some of which are in latter stages of development. For more information, go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. That's www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. If you're interested in talking to us, just fill out the contact sheet and we will get back with you.
Dr. Hugo Rodier has published 4 books on health issues covering practically all chronic health problems. You may find them by accessing his website at hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com. Gut health is the most academic, while switching off chronic disease is the most patient-oriented, with simple recipes to implement his nutritional protocols.
This is Dr. Rodier with Johnny Blue Star, Staring Things Up. We were talking about healthcare reform. And Johnny, I thought that I would bring up the Bible, if I may, just to prove a point.
Well, I'll see. I'll look in my book here and see if it's possible. Yeah, I think you can.
All right, good, thanks. Well, here goes. Who hasn't heard about the foolishness of putting new wine in old bottles or bags, you know, leather bags, as they used to have back then? Well, you know it's not going to work. The new wine is going to practically destroy the old bag. And so that's exactly what we're talking about here. We're talking about healthcare reform, financing it, but we're doing nothing about the old bottle. So it's just going to break down. We're going to continue financing a system that just doesn't work. So with that, I want to quote from the New England Journal, 2014, page 1280, "Swimming Against the Current. What might work to reduce low-value care?" Question mark. So the New England Journal quotes, says, "Given the evidence that as much as one-third of U.S. healthcare spending is wasteful, however, healthcare organizations are now embracing explicit consideration of value and turning their attention to overuse. Reducing overuse could theoretically improve quality while slowing spending growth," unquote. Now, I think it's a whole lot more than one-third being wasted, but this is a mainstream journal that at least admits that one-third is wasteful. So, Johnny, if we were to eliminate that waste, would we not be able to finance a better healthcare system where cheaper, more streamlined, more sensible care could be given to people that are not insured?
Yeah, I think that's really the way to go.
Yep.
You know, one of the things I'm most interested in, because of my work in developing a program that would allow voters in this country to work together collectively, is to actually formulate the core content of legislation privately developed by informed and interested citizens, as well as to create media that would permit the public to understand the critical importance of passing certain types of legislation. So I'm going to bring up certain issues. We don't have as much time as I would like, but I'd like you to comment on the kind of bills that could be proposed to address the various issues. This is not meant to say that these issues should necessarily happen right now. They're kind of ideal paradigms, but I'd like to see what you think about their quality, even though they might not be realistic for passing right away. For instance, how much medical research executed by government, private companies, or organizations, including nonprofits, has any real bearing on realistically protecting our health, remediating current health conditions based on unbiased science and devoid of primarily monetary motivations to create wealth by the sale of drugs or surgery directly or indirectly by the perpetuators of such scenarios. In other words, how much medical research is really being done that counts as far as we're concerned?
Well, it's hard to put a number on it, but I'll tell you a dirty little secret.
Okay.
A whole lot of the research is financed by public money, by your tax dollars, the NIH and other National Institute of Health and other government institutions are paying researchers who might latch on to something good, and then that research is picked up by the pharmaceuticals who create a drug around that research, and then they charge us an arm and a leg, not considering that we, the people, finance the research to begin with.
Who's the research done, though? Who does the research? Is it done by the pharmaceutical companies themselves or by third parties?
Yes and no. It's done by medical schools. So medical schools faculty get money from the government, grants, to pursue a given research. But when it starts to look like a drug can be created for it, then the pharmaceuticals begin to finance this researcher. And so pretty soon, as the drug is created, the pharmaceuticals will charge us a lot, arguing that they alone came up with the drug, true, but they used a lot of the principles and physiologic research and anatomical at times that we, you and I, paid for. And
wow, I really didn't understand that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So they are controlling, they are really controlling the last stages of that research to turn it into a drug.
Exactly. But we started the whole thing, your money, my money. But then there's another problem with this word research. Because the pharmaceuticals lump their marketing money into research. In other words, they will have a bunch of docs come for dinner at La Caille, you know, that fancy restaurant up on the hill, and they will spend, you know, 10 grand to pay for everything, maybe less, I don't know. And they call that research because while the presentation was made about the drug, they asked some Mickey Mouse questions. Doctor, how do you feel about this drug? What do you think? How could you use it? So the questionnaires and all that, which is totally Mickey Mouse, just grandstanding, they call that research. So they lump that marketing money to promote the use of those drugs, actually grease the palms of these attending doctors. They call all that research. So we need more clarity here. We need more openness as to what pharmaceuticals are doing with that money. And, of course, that money used to take doctors to the jazz games or to a weekend symposium about the drug in San Diego and who knows where, then all that is lumped as research. We have another number. It's probably higher now, but the last time I looked at it, pharmaceuticals are spending $15,000 per doctor per year to promote their drugs.
Really?
That's part of the money. Yeah, that's part of the money that goes into research. And so I don't see any of that money. So some of the doctors picking up the slack here, or the money that I'm, quote, leaving on the table, unquote. And so, yeah, some doctors, the number is a whole lot higher because I'm talking about an average. And there are a lot of doctors in the nation that do not see any of this money. And there are a lot of doctors like myself who will not allow pharmaceutical representatives to come into our offices. having said that, I have to admit, when I was young, you know, I was seduced by that money. I did go to La Caille quite a few times in San Diego on jazz games. Bang, you got me. But, you know, I've woken up, okay? I withdrew from that addiction, if you will.
Well, you know, before we go into more of the medical, if we have time for it, I think we need to go into another fact that that so-called modern science, the food industry, agriculturally oriented private companies, and the practice of farming itself over the last 100 years have all contributed to the desecration of our food supply. So if food is medicine, we've really screwed up our medicine. It's a huge problem. In an ideal world, what legislation is needed to turn this around? So let me ask a few questions to you. Okay, so In our last program, we talked about how the public's demand for organic food generated partially by GMO modifications and crops has certainly been a big influence in what supermarkets and other food stores are offering. But yet, I see a tremendous amount of non-organic products being sold as well, certainly a much greater percentage than organic. Do we need to turn this around?
Absolutely. You know, we call the problem big food, kind of like big pharma.
Really? I never heard that one.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, exactly. So if you Google big food, you're going to see a whole lot of articles. And the point being that food has become industrialized. They care nothing about the quality of the food. They just want to put it out there as cheaply as possible, as addicting as possible. They know full well that refined sugars and chemicals in our processed foods are addicting. And this has been documented very well in leading journals. And so, yeah, they just want to make money. They don't care that the food is not good quality. And in the process, we are destroying the planet with pesticides, a whole lot of other chemicals, even antibiotics for our farm animals, even steroids for our farm animals. It's a disgrace. That's why there's such a grassroots movement. There we go again, to eat more organic. And I tell you, I remember when we were trying to debate this politically. Forget about that. People are voting with their wallets. And so organic food is everywhere. Remember the big stink about labeling our food GMO or non-GMO and
yeah,
all that?
Sure.
Well, it went away. Why did it go away? We no longer hear about whether we should do it or whether we should legislate it or permit it or whatever. It went away because people voted with their money and the industry caught on that they're losing money if they don't start to make more GMO foods, more organic foods, and clearly labeling them. So the whole stink about should we create laws to do it or not do it went away because the public, we the people, determined with a little bit of education that is what we want.
Well, I think that's good progress, but is it enough progress? Okay, let me put it this way. Do we not need to eliminate the use of radical, untested genetical, chemical, and other scientific procedures like irradiating food through legislation? Do we need to just make it outlaw it? I'm talking about an ideal world here now, remember. I'm just saying, and given the real facts of the situation, wouldn't it be better if we could get rid of these things? How dare they drop this untested stuff on the people of their country? They could have all kinds of repercussions, even genetic repercussions down the line.
Exactly. Yes. Well, you know that Mr. Bush was the one that started that and green-lighted GMOs, Bush Sr., because his buddies were telling him to do so from the industry without any scientific proof.
It's amazing. But I'm not surprised. He seems like a good candidate to do that sort of thing, you know.
Well, let me ask this. Have you heard of the revolving door?
Yeah, I was going to talk about that.
Well, that's what's going on. And so the people in politics that create the legislation and regulations, the FDA, for example, Big Food comes around and says, hey, you know, why don't you quit that measly job that pays you nothing and come to work for us? And so these guys, you know, familiar with how Congress and Washington works, they sell themselves to the Big Food and Big Pharma, and they know the ins and outs of how to get around legislation and politics and the will of the people. And so that's what needs to change. You know, the most fundamental changes is how our democracy works, which, you know, this is a cat from another bag. I'm not sure we have a democracy anymore.
No, I'm not sure. No, we don't have a real democracy because we've got a programmed, hypnotized electorate. But I would like to just confirm what you're saying by quoting a little bit from an article that was written in September 2018 by Zachary Brennan called Revolving Door Between Industry and FDA Continues to Spin. I'm going to just read a few little paragraphs here. It's well known that leaving the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for industry can bring a major salary bump, so it should come as no surprise that the number of FDA employees making the leap in 2018, so let's look at a few of them. A biotech company, Moderna, announced that Wednesday that Wellington Sun, that's a name, former director of the Division of Vaccines and Related Product Applications at FDA's Center for Biological Evaluation Research, will be their new head of vaccine strategy and regulatory affairs. That'll help, because he knows all about that. Last month, Patrick Frey, chief of staff at FDA's Office of New Drugs, left to join Amgen as director of global regulatory policy. And former OND director John Jenkins was appointed in June to the board of director of Corbus Pharmaceuticals. Also in June, Elaine Moorfield, former deputy office director for review and administration of FDA, was appointed director of product quality at Aclaris Therapeutics, while Gerald Masudi, former FDA chief counsel, was appointed chief legal officer at GY Labs. So you got right there, you got 10 people or 7 people who are just dropping in to the regulatory aspects or the legal aspects of these drug companies.
Exactly. Well, here's a great article that I want to emphasize from the journal Science, 2002, page 1243, the title of the article, Homo Economicus. We're not Homo sapiens, we're Homo Economicus. And I'm okay with that. You know, that's just in our nature to barter, to sell you this so that I get money and you get some use from the product. And it's all good if we do it with respect for each other. All right. So to deny that we have an economic nature is foolishness.
I agree. I mean, it's so, part of our, I think, inalienable right to liberty.
Exactly. So we need to play with it instead of, like some people on the left, you know, they think that capital and money is totally anathema. And I used to think that way when I was a young man. But here's a great article from JAMA 2013, page 577. Title is, First, Do No Financial Harm. Talk about putting it all together, you see? And so we need to play with this thing instead of just saying Medicare for all and get rid of all the corporations and all the pharmaceutical and all the insurance companies and all that. It's just not going to work. Let me give you another fact. You know, I was so disappointed with Obama. I voted for him. But the minute I began to see what he was doing, even before stepping into the White House, you know, after election, president-elect, I thought, oh, my God. Because I saw who he surrounded himself with. It was all Wall Street drunks.
Goldman Sachs, yeah.
Exactly. And then it got worse when I began to see that for the first time in the history of our democracy, a Democrat got more money from Big Pharma than a Republican for the elections. Let me say it again. Obama got 3 times more money than McCain in 2007 for his political campaign. And so is it any wonder that he created Obamacare? Now, listen, Obamacare brought a lot of good things, okay? But what it did not bring is a new wine in old bottles. In other words, he helped finance a broken system, thereby perpetuating the waste that we're talking about.
Well, you know, I had the same impression of Obama that you did. And it was very sad for me. Because I was also concerned about human and citizen rights. And he didn't turn around anything. We were still under surveillance, and it just
made it worse.
And then he did. He got us into some pretty terrible straits with Libya and Syria. And it just he was just the same as everyone else.
Yeah, exactly.
We will now say our official farewell and go out with Patricia Welch singing her version of "The Wind Beneath My Wings."
For more information about Dr. Rodier's practice, books, blogs, and newsletters, contact Hugo Rodier, MD, at www.hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com.
Cold there in my shadow to never have sunlight on your face. You were content to let me shine, that's your way. once walked a step behind. So I was the one with all the glory, while you were the one with all the strength. Without a name for so long, a beautiful smile to hide the pain. Did you ever know that you're my hero and everything I would like to be? Beneath my wings, it might have appeared to go unnoticed, but I've got it all here in my heart. I want you to know, I know the truth, of course I know. I would be nothing without you. Did you ever know that you're my hero and everything I would like to be? Higher than an eagle, 'cause you are the wind. Yes, you are the wind beneath my wings. Yes, you are the wind beneath my wings.